The full moon day of the sixth lunar month is the important day of the Buddhist calendar when our Buddha was born, attained enlightenment, and passed away into final Nibbana, which falls all on the same day. And before the Buddha was born into his final life, the Buddha had to accumulate an immense amount of merit and barami, spiritual perfections, until they were fully complete in all 30 forms of barami. These include the normal level of barami, the superior higher level, which involves sacrificing limbs of the body, and the ultimate supreme level, which means sacrificing one's life in order to gain that barami. These are known as the 10 baramis, the 10 perfections, but in increasingly intense forms, with the highest level being to give up one's life for it. Therefore, for these perfections to be complete is not easy at all. Whether it is the perfection of generosity, morality, wisdom, patience, effort, equanimity, renunciation, which is ordaining, as well as the perfections of truthfulness and resolution, no ordinary person can accomplish them. It is only accomplished by a Buddha, the Buddhas of the past or in the future. So it is extremely difficult for a Buddha to arise and to be born into this world. So in the text found in the suttas, it is mentioned that the Buddha was born in Lumbini Garden and he could take 7 steps after his birth. This is interpreted symbolically to mean that he would go on to spread the Dhamma to 7 regions in what are now present-day India and Nepal. So it was considered that the Buddha would walk the noble path and teach throughout the regions and the entire country of India, teaching the Dhamma. Hence, after his birth, the Buddha made the exalted proclamation that he was the greatest in the world, the most supreme and most developed. This was because the Buddha had accumulated and cultivated his spiritual perfections. We can see that these days there may be people who are the best in the world in terms of research and various academic fields, or in various sports where there are world-class talents. We can see that they too must possess some of the perfections of effort, diligence, perseverance, and wisdom as well. But the supremely enlightened Buddha was supreme even in regard to worldly knowledge of that time. If the Buddha was born in this era, he would excel in all of the worldly knowledges, because the Buddha possesses far greater intelligence than ordinary humans. He is human like us, but not an ordinary one. He is the most supreme human being. This is because he has accumulated great spiritual perfections. And so the Buddha saw that even the slightest suffering was immensely huge suffering. Even though he was born and lived in the palace walls as Prince Siddhartha, with every form of happiness, he still had the wisdom to perceive even the smallest suffering as great suffering. He had the wisdom which reflects and contemplates in a way no one else could. That is, the Buddha thought that in this world there is heat, and there is also cold as a pear. There is darkness, and there is also light. From the moment we are born, we come to experience darkness and light, heat and cold, day and night. It's natural. There is birth and death, and it is seen as just the way things are. But even though it's natural, people don't really accept it as normal. When someone is born, we're happy. When they grow old, get sick, and die, we're sad. It's been like this in every existence, every lifetime. So the mind has been traveling a long, long time. But the Buddha saw that since birth exists and death exists, then what is alongside it, the state of no birth and no death, should also exist as well. Because being born, one must grow old, must have sickness and death. And once we're born, we have to face so many things. Up until death, it's full of suffering. There's competing, fighting, wars, and all sorts of troubles everywhere. At present, we can see that everything is troubled. There are external wars, such as trade wars, economic wars, and then the wars involving deadly weapons. This kind of thing has existed since the time of the Buddha as well. But the weapons back then weren't as dangerous. Nowadays, they're even more deadly. It's never going to end. So being born, and fighting, struggling, and seeking, and there is the arising of a self that ends up exploiting one another, and it's all full of suffering. And in the end, there is aging, sickness, and death as well. The Buddha contemplated that there must be something that is neither born nor dies. This is a profound wisdom. No one else could have thought of it. Back then, they also sought ways to avoid suffering. They practiced deep meditative absorptions in the typical style of the ascetics, focusing deeply into increasingly subtle states of bliss, starting from the form jhana to formless jhanas, absorptions. They would focus their minds until they became so refined and still, and higher than they nearly reached nibbana. However, in that deep tranquility, they lacked the wisdom to realize the Four Noble Truths, which is necessary to destroy ignorance, craving, and attachment. The Buddha observed and saw an old person, a sick person, a dead person, and the ascetic. He then reflected that he must find a way out. Being born leads to aging, sickness, and death, and that's not good at all. We all probably understand that it's not good. If we have knees, the knees hurt. If we have eyes, there are problems with the eyes. We have brains, and they deteriorate. At over 90 years old, the blood vessels become narrowed and clogged due to aging. The arteries to the heart also become blocked, which can lead to a stroke or heart attack. Our strength fades, our nerves slow down, our ability to walk and do all sorts of things decline, and our estimations become prone to errors. We slip and fall easily, our muscles grow weak, our bones become brittle. Everything about the body declines over time. Things that arise, made up of conditions, they naturally deteriorate like this. We can already see it. We have a car, and once it gets old, everything starts to wear out. You have to change this and that part of the car. Our body is like a machine, too. It needs to change, deteriorate, and be fixed. The body breaks down according to causes and conditions. But in the end, no matter what, we still can't keep it going. It doesn't last. The Buddha knew and saw things like this already, and thus sought a way out, one that led out of suffering. To do this, he had to make sacrifices, giving up everything he had. The happiness he had could not bring about wisdom. He had Princess Yashodhara, and Prince Rahula was born, and he became even more concerned. It would be even harder to seek the path. He had to leave quickly. If he stayed too long, the heart would be even more attached, and he wouldn't be able to leave. There are criticisms that the Buddha abandoned his family, but don't forget that the family he left behind, he didn't abandon them. He left to find a way out for his family, to help them find something better than what he could offer in the present. Though he could be a father for one lifetime, could give everything to his family, and they could be happy for that one life, but it wouldn't be true happiness. There would still be suffering, and separation would come again. So he went out first to seek the truth, and then would return to help guide everyone spiritually, so that everyone could receive the nectar of the Dhamma. So the Buddha would later return to teach Princess Yashodhara, Prince Rahula, his father and mother, and teach all his relatives. But the Buddha first had to set out on the quest to search for enlightenment. And because the Buddha, as the great Bodhisattva, had been practicing jhana for a long time, and even at the age of just 7 years old, he was able to enter samadhi concentration to the level of the first jhana. He possessed great spiritual perfections. And when the Buddha was born, there were 108 Brahmins who came to make predictions. They said that if he were to rule the kingdom, he would be a great, universal monarch. But if he chose the path of renunciation, he would become the supreme spiritual teacher of the world. But the young Brahmin, Venerable Anyakodanya, made only one prediction, that Prince Siddhartha would definitely become the Buddha. Even the hermit Asita was able to see this prediction and felt sorry that for his own life it was too late. He would pass away and be reborn as a Brahma god, missing the opportunity to listen to the Buddha teaching the sublime Dhamma. So he told his disciples and descendants, who would continue on as hermits, that when the Buddha ordains, that when Prince Siddhartha renounces the world and becomes a monk, they must follow him immediately. The Buddha had already practiced meditative jhanas extensively in many past lives, so in his final life it wasn't difficult at all. When he studied under the teachers Alara Kalama and Udaka Ramaputta, he quickly attained the four jhanas and the eight attainments, the highest levels of meditative concentration, and mastered them. No one could master them as skillfully as he did. His teachers even wanted to appoint him as the chief teacher to teach the disciples in their place. But the Buddha reflected and realized that, although his meditation had deep stillness, once he emerged from it, he still found himself thinking about Princess Yashodhara and Rahula. There was still concern, so it was probably not the path to liberation. So he went on to practice torturing his body by fasting, holding his breath, and enduring extreme pain. He fainted 3 times. An ordinary person would have died from such suffering. But since this was the Buddha's final life, he was destined to attain enlightenment. No matter how, he would not die. The Buddha practiced austerities for as long as 6 years, yet still had not attained enlightenment. He practiced every possible torturous method. So he returned to taking food again and followed the middle way, the Majjhima Patipada. This time he became truly resolute. He crossed the Naranjara River and sat in meditation beneath the great Bodhi tree, making a firm vow on the seat called the Vajra Asana, the diamond throne, the seat of one with a diamond-like heart. The Buddha made a solemn determination. If he did not attain enlightenment that night, he would rather die. That was his vow. He had done everything, tried every path. If he did not succeed that night, then let him die. He won't want to keep this body anymore. That's how strong his determination was. And on this occasion, the Buddha was able to enter the fourth jhana and able to contemplate from jhana, developing the knowledge known as the recollection of past lives. He came to understand the karma of all beings and could see both the future and the past. He clearly understood how beings were born, where they go after death, and how the being's karma results. He understood it all completely. This is known as the supreme knowledge of the fully enlightened Buddha, perfectly clear accurate and without error. And finally, in the last watch of the night, from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., he contemplated the subjects of dukkha, suffering, its origin, its cessation, and the path leading to its cessation. The Buddha's mind became fully unified, and he attained supreme enlightenment, becoming the supremely enlightened Buddha. This was the Buddha's virtue of supreme purity and the virtue of supreme wisdom. The Buddha had the virtue of great compassion that he had cultivated over countless lifetimes. And so, from the moment of his birth, the Buddha-to-be was complete with full compassion, destined to become a supremely enlightened Buddha, an Arahant, who would transcend becoming and birth, and reveal the way for all sentient beings to be freed from suffering. You see, when we have even just one or two children, we give them an education and send them to school, and we don't have any time left. We can only care for them to a certain extent. But the supremely enlightened Buddha saw all sentient beings as his children. He must lead them all out of the cycle of samsara, of birth and death. That was an incredibly great vow. Who among us could do that? At most, we can only help in small ways. But through the immense power of his spiritual perfections, the Buddha was able to do it. So we should reflect on the immeasurable virtues of the Buddha. Appamāno Buddho. They are truly immeasurable. If the Buddha had not attained enlightenment, we would have no understanding at all. We wouldn't know the path to cessation of suffering at all. We would simply follow our own defilements. And where would that lead us to? It would lead us according to our karma. Most often it would be bad karma, resulting in rebirth in unfortunate realms, such as the hell realms, or being born as hungry ghosts, asuras, demons, or animals. Those who could recognize goodness would perform acts of merit or uphold moral precepts, which would be very few and rare. Why is that? Because the spiritual accumulations are still lacking. Though there are some people who are born with great spiritual accumulations, like Lady Visakha and the wealthy merchant Anuttapindika. Lady Visakha, at just 7 years old, had extraordinary wisdom. At seven, she listened to the Dhamma and attained the first stage of enlightenment, Sotapanna. Well, we rejoice with her. It shows that she had accumulated a lot of merit in her past lives. And Anuttapindika, the wealthy merchant, attained the state of Sotapanna after listening to the Dhamma just once. He had already accumulated much merit. And if we look way back in their past, Anuttapindika would have once practiced giving and keeping precepts just like we are doing now. Over time, his strength grew more and more, the strength of his generosity, morality, and meditation grew more. And this is called building up one's spiritual accumulations. So the virtues of the Supreme Buddha are vast, boundless, and immeasurable. After attaining enlightenment, the Buddha remained silent, enjoying the bliss of liberation for 49 days, without any desire to teach at all. Because he saw that it would be difficult to find someone who would understand. However, out of great compassion and loving kindness, the sublime abidings arose in his heart, and he decided to help living beings. In the Buddhist history, it's recorded that Brahma Sahampati came to invite the Buddha to teach. But the Buddha's mind was already prepared. There simply needed to be someone truly willing to listen to the Dhamma. Thus he emerged from the perfection of equanimity, stepped out of the bliss of liberation, and began to teach the Dhamma with his infinite, immeasurable, great compassion for the next 45 years. This was something truly difficult to do. And every day the Buddha followed the practices and conduct of a Buddha. He never considered weariness or exhaustion, because his time was immensely precious. He had to help all beings who were suffering to be able to be freed from their suffering. For all those who had made aspirations to follow the Buddha would teach them all before he entered final Nibbana. Before entering final Nibbana, the Buddha went to give teachings to the lay male and female devotees, Chunda and his wife, who both attained to stream entry. The Buddha also taught the ascetic Subhadra to attain to arahantship. And lastly, in the Buddha's final teaching, he instructed all of us to remain established in heedfulness and diligence. Therefore, every day we must remind ourselves not to be careless. Life is uncertain, but death is certain. The Buddha taught us not to be negligent. We must cultivate goodness. On the weekly Buddhist observance days, we come to pay respects to the Buddha, observe the precepts, and give dana to the Sangha. This merit lies within our hearts, gradually accumulating inside of us, bringing a sense of fulfillment and happiness through our practice of generosity, moral conduct, and meditation. And finally, one day, the mind becomes calm and gathers inwardly, seeing the state of Dhamma, seeing all things as emptiness. We then clearly understand the teachings that the Buddha had taught, that form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness are emptiness. They are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. They are emptiness, without any true self at all. But ignorance tells us that this is us, that is ours. And so we only have suffering, stress, and worries. If the Buddha had not come to teach, we would have no idea how to find a way out. However, out of his loving kindness and compassion, he taught the Dhamma, the immeasurable Dhamma. The Dhamma has been taught, and we practice according to that Dhamma. And there is the Sangha from the Buddha's time who are arahants, all the way to the present day with Venerable Ajahn Mun and Venerable Ajahn Chah, who also preserved and taught the Dhamma. So we practice according to their teachings, reciting and meditating on Butto, Dhammo, and Sangho as our objects of focus. It is recollecting on the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. The mind becomes calm. Even if we use other meditation repetitions or Butto with other various repetitions following, it is still the same essence. The mind becoming calm, deeply entering into samadhi concentration and meditation first. As we hold the Buddha in the highest reverence, we mentally repeat, Buddhang saranang gacchami. So may you make the mind to be peaceful. This is a technique to calm the mind and prevent it from wandering around everywhere. Then the five hindrances will disappear. Sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, and remorse, and doubt. These five companions of ours, which are always swarming around in the mind, they begin to fade away. And when they fade away, the mind becomes calm and still and enters into samadhi. Once a samadhi is strong, we begin to see that material phenomena is not self, and mental phenomena is not self. Even glimpsing this briefly brings us a sense of fullness and happiness. Eventually we come into contact with emptiness and realize, oh, there is such happiness here. It can be compared to a faint light, the light of the emptiness of Nibbana. And even that little bit already brings us such happiness. If our mind were completely empty and free from all attachment, how immense would that happiness be? The happiness that comes from when there is emptiness in the mind. No greed, no anger, no delusion. So this gives us a comparison. But at that stage, it's still within the realm of thought and wisdom. We must continue practicing until it becomes deeper, until we truly see and understand, and we see the Buddha clearly within our own heart. This is how we live without heedlessness, by gathering together, studying the Dhamma, and to realize and truly see the truth according to the Buddha's teachings. Then the Dhamma will protect each of us, bringing happiness and freedom from all suffering and illnesses. May you grow in blessings.